We're in our Ango practice period now, so we're studying the theme from Ango. And as most of you know, the theme is from Suzuki Roshi. We should find perfect existence within imperfect existence. So we're studying this. We're exploring what it means to find perfect existence. Within our actual lives, within imperfect existence. And we've been looking at even the notion of what perfect or imperfect might mean. So there's a wonderful brief section in Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, that Suzuki Roshi said. He said, there is a Japanese saying, for the moon, there is the cloud. For the flower, there is the wind. When we see a part of the moon covered by a cloud or a tree, or perhaps a weed, then we can feel how round the moon is. But when we see the clear moon without anything covering it, we do not feel that roundness the same way we do when we see it through something else. Have you noticed that? Mm-hmm. Have you noticed that when there's a cloud in front of the moon, you can really feel the full body of the moon somehow, even though there seems to be a cloud in front of it? The part you can't see, you're actually filling in yourself. It's coming from you. The fullness of the moon is actually ourselves. So, but we don't really know that until we can't see it. It's almost as if because it's absent, we're present. Because we can't see the moon, we can actually see the moon. But when we actually see the full moon, it's quite beautiful, but it's almost as if something might be missing. So that's what this saying is about. And Suzuki Roshi says, when we see the clear moon without anything covering it, we do not feel that roundness the same way we do when we see it through something else. Remember, the subject of my talk tonight is we should find a perfect existence within imperfect existence. So that's a nice image. When the moon is perfectly clear, it's something missing somehow. But when it's covered, it's just perfect. When you practice Zazen, you should not try to attain anything. You should just sit in the complete calmness of your mind and not rely on anything. Just keep your body straight without leaning over or leaning against something. To keep your body straight means not to rely on anything. In this way, physically and mentally, you will obtain complete calmness. But to rely on something, or to try to do something in Zazen, to try to gain something in Zazen, like enlightenment, is dualistic and is not complete calmness. In our everyday life, we're usually trying to do something, trying to change something into something else, or trying to attain something. Just this trying is already in itself an expression of our true nature. It's, for example, with practice, it's our aspiration that's coming to the fore. The meaning lies in the effort itself. We should find out the meaning of our effort before we attain something. In other words, we don't find out the meaning of our effort after we get it. We find it out in the effort itself. In other words, in our imperfect moment. We don't wait till we actually have it. It's before we have it that we actually have it. When we get it, it's just like the full moon in the sky. Something's missing. So Dogen said, we should attain enlightenment before we attain enlightenment. It is not after attaining enlightenment that we find its true meaning. The trying to do something is itself enlightenment. When we are in difficulty or distress, right there we have enlightenment. When we are in defilement, there we should have composure. Usually we find it very difficult to live in the evanescence of life, but it is only within the evanescence of life that we can find the joy of eternal life. Any of you who have had a serious accident, a life-threatening illness, or have been near someone you love who has been facing the transitoriness, the impermanence of existence, right there you can feel something quite special, can't you? When we just have nothing wrong, we just say, oh, well, just, you know, life, we can just live it forever, no problem. But when we face the transitoriness of life, when we face the evanescence of life, the changeability of life, the impermanence of life, then we know something about life itself. Then we know how wonderful it really is. I was thinking the other day that one of the great challenges for people who are trying to really know who and what we really are is the crime of excess in our Western culture. And because we have so much, we throw everything away. In other words, because we have so much, nothing means anything to us. It used to be that people had very little, so they would treasure that little bit that they had. They would really understand what one grain of rice, or 10 grains of rice, or 20 grains of rice might be. The value of one turnip, the value of one potato, when you have 5 children. But because we have not one potato, but 1 ton of potatoes, and if they go bad, we just throw them out and go get some more. We don't know what a potato is. We don't know what rice is. And we don't know what our life is either. And because of the way our Western culture has developed, even human life is not worth so much. We just kind of throw it away. We have some feeling there's always more, no problem. Everything can be fixed. Until we finally face the truth of impermanence, the truth that this life itself, this one life, is the only life that we have. We treat it rather shabbily, frankly. And we're encouraged by our culture to treat this beautiful, miraculous life that we have as if it's nothing at all. If we weren't encouraged, how could we treat each other the way we treat each other? How could we just kind of trash other people or decide they're not worth anything or they're in our way or it's okay to step on them because we're going somewhere? This is the product of a kind of a delusion, a dualistic way of living, and a living based on excess. Excess means too much, not just the right amount. I think that when we have so many choices as we do, it diminishes our understanding of how precious and important every moment is. Because we think the moments of life are endless, we forget to be alive right now. Because we think people are expendable, we can throw away these guys and expect we'll get those guys. But it's really a nightmare, as we see. Because we thought the planet was infinite, we trash it. And now we find out we were wrong. It's finite. So we don't really understand the gift until we until we really explore what evanescence, what transitoriness, what impermanence really means. Usually we find it very difficult to live in the evanescence of life, but it is only within the evanescence of life that we can find the joy of eternal life. By continuing your practice with this sort of understanding, you can improve yourself. But if you try to attain something without this understanding, you cannot work on it properly. You lose yourself in the struggle for your goal. You achieve nothing. You just continue to suffer in your difficulties. But with right understanding, you can make some progress. Then, whatever you do, even though it's not perfect, will be based on your inmost nature, and little by little, something will be achieved. Which is more important, to attain enlightenment or to attain enlightenment before you attain enlightenment? To make $1 million or to enjoy your life in your effort, little by little, even though it is impossible to make that $1 million? To be successful or to find some meaning in your effort to be successful? If you do not know the answer, you will not even be able to practice Zazen. If you do know, then you will have found the true treasure of your life. So this is quite wonderful, don't you think? Which is more important? Perfection? Perfect existence? Or to find perfect existence within imperfect existence? It's so wonderful, isn't it? It really points to the fact that when we make a sincere effort in any area of our life, it doesn't really matter whether we reach the goal or hit the bell or get the brass ring or make the $1 million or become famous or something. It's the effort itself. It's the working through our imperfection that is so wonderful, that is so perfect. You know the story of this little boy, this 6-year-old boy, whose father told the media about the boy flying away in the balloon? Did you hear this story? Mm-hmm. You know it's a hoax, right? So, the cops, right, the police were told the 6-year-old boy is in the balloon. And so they do this whole search thing and rescue, and they finally, the balloon comes down and there's no boy in the balloon. Where is the boy? The boy is hiding in the attic where his father told him to hide. Finally, they realize there's something wrong here and they uncovered the hoax. The boy was never in the balloon, in the whatever that thing is that carries the balloon. Why did he do it? Do you know what he said, the father? He wanted to achieve real fame before the world ends in 2012. That's what he said. Can you hear how crazy that is? That's completely crazy. So he makes up this kind of crazy story. We should really recognize that he's not the only person with kind of strange ideas of of some ultimate perfect moment, right? He just sort of acted it out for all of us. We have our own strange ideas. They may not be as publicly bizarre as his, but privately they may be not so far away. I won't ask you to reveal your own personal balloon story. But we should recognize that what's really missing from this poor man and from what he's taught his children is the sincere engagement with real life. The honest, authentic, and genuine effort in the moment, and the value that comes to him from that effort in the moment to actually engage life itself. Perfection is not something that you achieve at the end of a series of efforts. Perfection is your imperfect effort itself. That's where we find it. Right in the midst of our failure is the greatest achievement, when we give ourselves completely. You know, in at our home temple, we would have work practice, and usually people would try to get the job done in the 2 hours in the morning or 3 hours in the afternoon. And because people would try to get the job done, they would always make a lot of mistakes, so we would have to work the next day too. But by just really attending to what we were doing, really taking care of what we were doing, somehow the job got done well enough. And many people learned how to actually pay attention within the midst of their effort to their life, and to appreciate their life through their effort. I remember once my job was picking blackberries, and at some point I thought, wow, man, I'm really picking blackberries. I mean, I never realized how wonderful picking blackberries was until I was actually picking blackberries. And then I was doing it so carefully, and Roshi came by and we bowed, and he said, "How's it going?" I said, "Oh, that's really great, man. I'm really picking blackberries." He said, okay, pick them faster. So, you see, I had some blackberry perfection fantasy going. So when you think it's not important to get the job done, it turns out it's important to get the job done. When you think it's important to get the job done, it turns out it's not important. The point is, you cannot win. So anytime you try to win, forget it. Just go in the opposite direction. But make a sincere effort. And that's really all that we can do. Our sincere effort is everything. So for those of you who are working on your Ango practice, on the various peaceful dwellings that you've selected during this practice period, maybe keep the spirit of Suzuki Roshi's teaching in mind. Remember that you're not expected to accomplish peaceful dwelling. You're not expected to say, okay, I set out my goal and I did it. That's not real. You're expected to engage in the practice of peaceful dwelling that you've chosen. That you're, by bringing yourself just to doing it, like with Zazen, not relying on anything, including your idea, just to sort of sit upright, hold yourself up, maintain your attention and your concentration in the activity itself, is sufficient. That in itself is peaceful dwelling. The idea that you have to accomplish it in order for it to be peaceful dwelling is foolish. It's actually a waste of your time. Mm-hmm. So I just thought, we're sort of halfway through the practice period, I would try to disabuse everyone of their idea of perfect peaceful dwelling. Because by now you've had enough time to become completely confused. What time is it, Jenny?
22.
Does anyone have any comments or questions or something they want to say about the practice?
Well, it's this thing with Ango. It's a even though, I mean, we strive to or we make an effort with our practice continuously, regardless of whether it's Ango or not, there's definitely a sense of focus mm-hmm. that comes. And I guess that's, I'm not sure what I'm trying to say here, but sometimes there's this sense of something special. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it's like it's a special time to dedicate to practice. Mm-hmm. And therefore there's this sense of, you know, relinquishing it, like, you know, it's, you know, like of cherishing it.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe out of that comes this whole idea of accomplishing something.
Mm-hmm.
You
know? So if you, it's a great question. If you cherish what you're doing completely, then you won't have any idea of accomplishment. But if you cherish what you do 99% and 1% is greedy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Wants to make cherishing accomplish something, you actually undo the cherishing and you hold nothing in your hand. So as soon as you, so when you cherish, it's so wonderful. Think of a baby, okay? You have this new baby and you hold the baby and it's the perfect moment, right? And then, would you say, someday this baby is going to wash my car? No, you wouldn't, right? You would hold the baby. You just hold the baby, right? If you say, and that will be a great day, right? You hear how crazy that is, right? Someday this baby will wash my car and then this will be a perfect baby. No, it's crazy, right? Mm-hmm. So when you cherish, as soon as you hear that other thing coming, the gaining idea, the what it's going to do for you, just smile and say, oh, isn't this great? My delusions are so clear. And then cherish your delusion, but don't follow it.
Cherish my imperfection.
Cherish your imperfection. Cherish how quickly you can, you're holding something so precious. Mm-hmm. And even in that moment, part of us splits off, right? Mm-hmm. And tries to make it do something else for us. And just see it, notice it. And when you see it, that's the Buddha right there. Smiling at you, saying, I mean, your delusion, right, is the Buddha. Saying, look how clear I'm making you to you. Mm-hmm. So you smile and say thank you. And go back and hold the baby. Or do the activity. And just cherish it. But no, yeah, that's right. This is a human life. And isn't it wonderful? And aren't we so silly? And miraculous. All at the same time. We're very complex, you know. We can be both silly and miraculous in exactly the same moment. How many beings can claim that? Yeah, it's really good, right? Because that gaining mind comes in so fast, so subtle. Just, oh, how did it get there? But rather than let it ruin the moment, make it part of the joy of the moment. And just smile at it. Yeah, there I am again. Gotcha. But don't make it bad. Any other comment or question? Yeah, Jeff.
That's kind of similar. The words I hear in this more is more surrender and accept what is. And for me, that's really difficult, you know. Mm-hmm. That's accepting where I am right now at all times, which I'm not that happy about at all times. And it's, it almost feels like a letting go that... I mean, kind of lost, but... I think the same thing, I had a hard time being there. My gaining mind is constant. It is so constant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but in a way, what you just said is, I really have a hard time letting go of the part of me that is dissatisfied. Mm-hmm. Not the part of me that is really satisfied. But I'm really God, it's going to be really hard for me to give up that part of me that's unhappy.
That's true.
Okay. So, go ahead, cherish the part of you that's unhappy.
Yeah, go for it.
Be my guest.